Welcome to Onc Live On Air. I'm your host today, Ashling Wehner. Onc Live On Air is a podcast from Onc Live, which provides oncology professionals with the resources and information they need to provide the best patient care. In both digital and print formats, Onc Live covers every angle of oncology practice, from new technology to treatment advances to important regulatory decisions. In today's episode, we had the pleasure of speaking with Jason Gottlieb, MD, who joined us to discuss the FDA approval of avapritinib in patients with indolent systemic mastocytosis. Dr. Gottlieb is a professor of medicine hematology at Stanford University and a member of Stanford Cancer Institute, both in California. On May 22, 2023, the FDA granted approval to avapritinib for adult patients with indolent systemic mastocytosis. This approval was backed by findings from the Phase 2 PIONEER trial, in which avapritinib plus best supportive care led to a total symptom score decrease of 15.6 points versus a decrease of 9.2 points with placebo plus best supportive care from baseline to week 24. In our exclusive interview, Dr. Gottlieb discussed the significance of this approval, key efficacy and safety findings from the PIONEER trial, and the quality of life benefits that avapritinib provides for patients with indolent systemic mastocytosis. All right, so just starting off talking about the FDA approval of avapritinib in mastocytosis, can you just start off by discussing the significance of this approval and how it may affirm or change current practice patterns going forward?
Avapritinib is a oral and highly selective and potent inhibitor of KIT D816V, and that is a mutant protein found in approximately 90 to 95% of patients with mastocytosis, including indolent forms of the disease. And so from a mechanistic point of view or rationale point of view, you know, that is the mutation that drives mast cells to divide and accumulate in patients with mastocytosis. The drug was previously approved by the FDA in 2021 for advanced forms of systemic mastocytosis. Those are patients that have shortened life expectancy and oftentimes organ damage related to their mast cell disease. And it was approved by the EMA in 2022 as second-line therapy for advanced SM. The FDA approval was for frontline therapy of advanced SM. Based on the results of the Phase 1 EXPLORE trial and Phase 2 Pathfinder trial, the interim analysis, which were the data that formed the basis of the FDA and EMA approvals for advanced disease, we felt that the drug certainly would have a potential niche for patients with indolent disease because we saw with the drug in advanced disease that it did several things. First of all, it reduced or reversed organ damage related to the mast cells. It reduced the serum tryptase levels, and the tryptase level is a useful biomarker for burden of disease. It reduced splenomegaly. It reduced the KIT D816V variant allele frequency, which is just another way of saying the mutation burden in the disease. It also reduced symptoms and improved quality of life. And so given the fact that you have a generally well-tolerated drug that was able to improve symptoms, we felt that that could be a potential benefit in indolent disease, where patients with indolent disease, one has generally a lower mast cell burden, but patients can be very much handicapped by substantial symptoms, impairing quality of life. And so that is the basis for at least studying it in patients with indolent disease. This was a three-part study, which basically looked at patients with indolent mastocytosis who had moderate to severe symptoms based on a total symptom score, patient-facing questionnaire, which has been validated in patients with indolent disease. And it was also for patients with indolent disease that had been on two or more best supportive care medications. And so the population is, again, patients who have been on best supportive care medications with a moderate to severe symptoms. And there is an unmet need in this population because despite being on best supportive care, a substantial proportion of patients can still have substantial symptom burden and impaired quality of life. And so we need something to try to improve upon their quality of life. And that was the clinical rationale for looking at avapritinib in this patient population.
Can you explain some of the key efficacy findings from the PIONEER trial that led to this approval?
This was a 2-to-1 randomization. There was 71 patients randomized to placebo. There was 141 patients randomized to avapritinib. And these patients were, again, on best supportive care. We looked at the addition of placebo versus avapritinib. The primary endpoint of the trial was change in total symptom score. And the key secondary endpoints were reduction of serum tryptase level, also reduction of the mutation burden, a greater than 50% reduction in the total symptom score, a greater than 30% reduction in the total symptom score, and also reduction in bone marrow mast cell burden. The trial really did meet all of the primary and secondary endpoints. Part one of the study, first of all, tried to identify the go-forward dose. So in part one, there were some 39 patients that were randomized to either 25 milligrams per day of avapritinib, 50 milligrams per day of avapritinib, 100 milligrams per day of avapritinib, or placebo. Ultimately, based on a composite looking at symptom scores, looking at tolerability, looking at PK levels, 25 milligrams daily was deemed the go-forward dose for part two. Part two really forms the meat of the trial that led to its registration. Part two was avapritinib 25 milligrams daily versus placebo added to best supportive care on a patient that had a moderate to severe total symptom score. In part two, patients were on either the addition of placebo or avapritinib to best supportive care for 24 weeks. So the readout of the primary endpoint and the secondary endpoints were at 24 weeks. And that again is where you had a statistically significant improvement of the total symptom score versus placebo. For example, there was a decrease in the mean TSS of 15.6 points with avapritinib compared to 9.2 points with placebo. The key secondary endpoints, again, looked at the issue of reduction of serum tryptase level. So, for example, there was a 54% decrease in serum tryptase level in the avapritinib group, and that was compared to 0% in the placebo arm. And then, if you looked at the other secondary endpoints, again, during part two at 24 weeks, with regard to a 50% reduction in total symptom score, it was 25% in the avapritinib group and 10% in the placebo group. And then if you look at another secondary endpoint, that is a greater than 30% reduction in the total symptom score, 45% had a 30% reduction in the total symptom score compared to 30% with placebo. And again, there was a significant reduction in bone marrow mast cell burden, 53% in the avapritinib group and 23% in the placebo group. And these were all statistically significant. So you're looking at reduction of symptoms, you're looking at reduction of biomarker in the serum tryptase level, you're looking at reduction of the KIT mutation level, which may represent maybe with long-term use disease-modifying effect, and you're looking at reduction of bone marrow mast cell burden. So on all these accounts, avapritinib did perform better than placebo.
Could you just maybe describe some of the safety findings from this trial?
First of all, I would just say that the drug was well tolerated. If you look at the safety summary, the most common side effects in both groups tended to be, for example, headache and nausea. There was some dizziness, diarrhea, and fatigue. More importantly, because patients with disease or treated with these best supportive care medications and have side effects of either any of those issues, it's important to look at what are the distinguishing side effects of avapritinib versus placebo with regard to frequency. And so I would say that the findings that were more frequent in the avapritinib group compared to placebo included facial or periorbital edema, low-grade increases in the alkaline phosphatase. And that was a signal that we saw in the advanced SM population. But the increase in alkaline phosphatase tended to be transient, low-grade, and not clinically significant. There were also some increases in flushing in the avapritinib group versus placebo. Again, low-grade and not felt to be clinically significant. The other important thing I would note is that in this patient population, these are patients that when we talk about symptoms, what are we talking about? So we're talking about fatigue, skin spots, itching, bone pain, brain fog, flushing, headache, dizziness, diarrhea, abdominal pain, and nausea. I would note that we did see significant reduction in skin spots because that's part of the presentation of these patients. They can have cutaneous mast cell lesions. The one issue that we always keep our eye on in these patients is anaphylaxis. The study was not powered to look at differences in anaphylaxis. In fact, the number of events of anaphylaxis on trial were very low. So the trial was not able to discriminate whether avapritinib versus placebo had a statistically significant or clinically significant difference in mitigating that significant issue.
Could you just kind of describe overall what you would say is, the future for avapritinib in the overall treatment paradigm for this population?
Point one would be that patients with indolent mastocytosis, although we're using the term indolent, it's by no means indolent with regard to the fact that a significant proportion of these patients can have severe impairment of quality of life because of the burden of the symptoms. So with the foundation of treatment of these patients being the use of, for example, antihistamines, leukotriene antagonists, and other medicines to try to mitigate their symptoms, they still have a lingering residual symptom burden. The takeaway from this trial is that now we have another medicine that can show significant clinical improvement of these patients. Number two is that all of these patients have a near normal or normal life expectancy. Again, these patients can live with decades with a significant symptom burden. And so the issue is with this medication, are you going to be able to not only improve symptoms over time, but is there any possibility of whether there can be disease modification? I think that disease modification to me means some improvement in progression-free survival, overall survival. Unfortunately, a trial that is being conducted over just ultimately 5 years is not going to be able to address the issue of disease modification per se. But if you're reducing mast cell burden, reducing the level of the KIT mutation, certainly that raises the question as to whether the use of avapritinib or other inhibitors of KIT may have some potential impact on disease modification. And the last point I would say is that whenever you're looking at a drug where you're using it for long term, you also don't perhaps know what medium to long term tolerability issues or toxicity issues may arise because we're only getting a snapshot of this drug, over a period of a few years. So that is something that is certainly we will need to keep an eye on as both investigators and the community of patients.
That's all we have for today. Thank you for listening to this episode of OncLive On Air. Check back on Mondays and Thursdays for exclusive interviews with leading experts in the oncology field. For more updates in oncology, be sure to visit www.onclive.com and sign up for our e-newsletters. OncLive is also on social media. On Twitter, follow us at OncLive. On Facebook, like us at OncLive, and follow our OncLive page on LinkedIn. If you liked today's episode of OncLive On Air, please consider subscribing to our podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, Amazon Music, and many of your other favorite podcast platforms so you get a notification every time a new episode is posted. While you are there, please take a moment to rate us. Thanks again for listening to OncLive On Air.